Good evening. In some sense, this year is going to be about Aliyah. And since it's going to be about Aliyah, I might as well begin by welcoming a number of new Olim. I'm always thrilled, you know, I like to, you know, when you see people and, you know, they live and they breathe and they have real blood coursing through their veins, and they came on Aliyah, even at such a difficult moment in Jewish history. Kol HaKavod, we have Sarah Parisi, a new Olah of 2 weeks, who lives in Modi'in. Dr. David and Florence Hammer, that was a little bit, I would say, sort of mishpucha. Very much mishpucha. Now, Sarah comes from Denver. And David and Florence Hammer come from Muncie, New York. And we welcome them and we wish them that they should have a Yishuv Tov. All right. Leah? Mm-hmm. What's your last name, Leah?
Leah what?
Where from?
Connecticut.
Where in Connecticut?
Norwalk,
Bridgeport. We all know about Norwalk and Bridgeport. All right, that's four new Olim. Anybody else over here? What's your name?
Izzy.
Where are you from, Izzy?
My family's
Huh? What did he say? I didn't hear it. Oh, you came with Nefesh B'Nefesh. Oh, wait a minute. You're in Ramat Beit Shemesh, aren't you? No?
No, people went all over. Most of them ended up in Beit Shemesh.
But you didn't. You're different. Okay. It's not running. It stopped. All right. We're starting now. There's a little story to the shiur that I'm going to say tonight, and the story is related to the Israel Center. There are some of you that may yet remember when the Israel Center was at number 10 Strauss Street. All right. And it must have been about 5 or 6 years ago, I was invited to speak on a Motzei Shabbos at the Israel Center by a group of women who were involved with Kever Rachel. And I agreed. It turned out that that week was an extremely heavy and difficult week for me. That Shabbos, you know, of course, that rabbis, in addition to working very hard on Shabbos, they work hard a whole week. I mean, this is something that you have to be aware of. But on Shabbos, we work even harder than we work a whole week. And here it comes, it's Motzei Shabbos, and I'm supposed to speak at the Israel Center, in addition to the fact that I'm supposed to speak at somebody's 70th birthday party after that, and then I have to catch a plane that night to Chutz La'aretz. So I would say that I was in a little bit of a tiz, and the fact is that I hadn't had any opportunity whatsoever to even think about Kever Rachel. My wife said, "You're not going to drive." My youngest son, Yirmi, he'll drive you because you're under too much pressure. So we start driving. I tell him I don't have a drasha. I don't have anything to say. We're leaving Har Nof and we pass the Binyanei HaUmah, and I don't have what to say. I look heavenward and I say to Rabbeinu Shlomo, it's going to be a shanda nachar. It's going to be a terrible, terrible bizoyan. I'm going to come walking in there to a room full of hundreds of women, and I have to speak about Kever Rachel and I have nothing to say. And here as we continue driving, so we cross onto Agrippus, we're on our way up Agrippus, we're someplace around the Shuk, and some ideas begin to come flowing through my mind. We get to the light on at Chof Yafo, go up Nevi'im, the ideas are rushing now. I just need another minute. So there was a light, a red light at Nevi'im. Enough time, we make a left turn, and right there was the Israel Center, and I come walking up, and I have a drasha. So I want to tell you what I said then, because there is a postscript and an addenda to what I said that evening. You should have your source sheets in front of you. There is a medrash. Doesn't appear on your sheet. There is a medrash that says on the day of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the great came before God to cry and bemoan and beg of him not to commit the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the exile of the Jewish people. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Medrash even says that God sent Yirmiyahu, sent Jeremiah, go to the Maros, Arachpela, wake up Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and they stand up before God, and they beg, they plead, they importune, no response. Yirmiyahu runs to the Yarden, and he wakes up Moshe, and he tells Moshe, you must stand up before God now, and God does not respond. And then Rachel. Then comes Rachel Imenu. And Rachel is the one who refuses to be consoled. The great words of Yirmiyahu that are Vahav Torah for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Kol Amar Hashem, so says God, called the Rama Nishmat, the second part of number 5. Kol Amar Hashem, so says God, called the Rama Nishma, there is a voice that's heard in Rama, Nihi, Bechi, Tamrudim, moaning, crying bitterly. Rachel Mevakva al Baneha, Rachel cries for her children. May Anal Lihinachem, she refuses to be consoled, al Baneha ki Einenu, for her children who are not there. To her, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, Ko Omar Hashem, so says God. Min'i kolech mibechi, withhold your voice from crying, ve'einayich midima, let not tears come from your eyes, ki yefsocha lefulatech, because there is reward for what you have done, Ne'um Hashem, says God, v'shavu me'eretz oyev, they're going to return from the land of the enemy. V'yesh tikva la'acharitech, and there is hope for your very end, Ne'um Hashem, says God, v'shavu banim le'vulam, the children are going to return to their boundaries. This promise is made not to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, or Moshe, or Yirmiyahu. This promise is made to Rachel. And the Medrash explains that this promise is made to Rachel because of the fact that she did not permit her sister to be embarrassed. She gave the simanim to Leah. But what came to me during the course of that night ride between Binyanei HaOman, the Israel Center, was a completely different thought that I want to share with you. And as I say, I've revisited what I said 5 years ago, and I have more to say about it, and I think it may even be relevant to our present situation. There is an unusual, exceptional, difficult dialogue that takes place in Torah. Number one, Vatere Rachel, ki lo yolda liYaakov. Rachel saw that she had not given birth to Yaakov. Vatikanei Rachel ba'achota, and Rachel was jealous of her sister, Vatomer Yaakov, and she said to Yaakov, Havali bonim, give me children, v'im ayin, and if not, meso onochi, I'm dead. Incredible! Incredible! What is she saying to Yaakov? Give me children, if not, I am dead. Vayicharaf Yaakov v'Rachel, Yaakov got angry with Rachel. Vayomer, he said, Hatachat Elokim Anochi, am I in the place of God? Asher manani meich privoten, who has withheld the fruit of the womb? Am I God? What do you want from me? What's unusual about these two psukim, of course, is what Rachel says is absolutely irrational. It's not the workings of an intelligent mind. He can't give her children. Yaakov is really responding to her in a logical way. What do you want from me? I'm not God. I can't give. He withheld children from yourself. It's his business, not mine. The Medrash says it's brought by the Ramban, and I have it here quoted from the Mesilat Yesharim. Yaakov al shechora apo b'Rachel, Yaakov, because he became angry with Rachel, Sha'omrelo, who said to him, Hovo libanim, give me children, Amru b'medrash zelish shonam, the Medrash says the following, Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Yaakov, Kach onin es hama'ukos, is this the way you answer a woman who's in distress? A woman who's despondent? A woman who's in great pain? This is the way you talk to her? This is the response of a Yaakov Avinu? You know that she is in a terrible state. Most probably Yaakov should have said, Rachel, let's say another kapitel tillin. Let's do another mitzvah. Maybe the Rabbeinu Shlomo will have mercy and compassion. No! What does he say to her? I'm not God. I'm not the one who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb. There's something else that's troubling about Yaakov Avinu's response. And I really don't want to accuse him of something, but you can hear it in these words. We have God's professional accountants who know why every tragedy happens. It happened because of Chilul Shabbos. It happened because people didn't keep Shemitah yet. It happens because of Lashon Hara. By the way, usually the ones who level these accusations and are God's accountants, it's so fascinating. It's never something that they did. It's always something that somebody else did. He seems to be telling her, listen, you don't have children, that's your problem. God has withheld it from you. Two psukim that are so difficult to understand, so difficult to learn, so difficult to say them. Rachel is speaking out of the distress. Out of the distress of her heart. She's bitter. Havali bana, give me children, you might may son of. And he responds as though he's talking to a rational woman. Mind the place of God, Ashemona Nimeh Pribate. Very difficult conversation to understand. So then I thought to myself the following. Let the scene shift now to the day of the Churban Bet HaMikdash. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov are standing before God and pleading on behalf of the Jewish people. Moshe pleads, Yirmiyahu pleads. And then Rachel, I want to paint a picture for you. Rachel stands up before the Rebbeim. What is she saying to God on that day? Give me my children, and if not, I am dead. Give me my children. They're going off into exile. Let's figure it out. What's God going to say to Rachel? Can he say, Hatachat Elokim Anochi, am I the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? I am God. He is God. Or maybe there's another possibility. The other possibility is that the Rebbeinu should speak to Rachel and say it as it is. Your children, Hoy goy choyte am keved avon zera mireim bonim mashchisim niyatsu was kadosh yisrael nazoru achor, they have sinned on every hill and in every mountain, they've worshipped idols, they've desecrated the Shabbos. He can give her the whole litany of all the terrible things that Jews have done, and I'm sorry, that's why I'm bringing the Churban. Oh no, he can't say that. You know why he can't say that? Standing there is Yaakov Avinu, who's already giving the Rebbeinu Shlomo a look, so to say, Kach onin es hamarukos. Is this the way you answer a woman in distress, O God? What choice does he have? He has no choice. when Rachel stands up before him, because God had condemned Yaakov, he has no choice anymore but to say, Rachel, you're right, I am God, and it's in my hands, and you know what I tell you? I promise you, I give you a guarantee for Shavu Banim Legvulam, your kindalach, they're going to come back home. That was 5 years ago. A number of, 2 months ago, I had to speak for a convention of rabbis here in Israel. And you know, it's good to rethink ideas from time to time. And all sorts of new things began to bother me. Since God condemns Yaakov, kach onin es hamu'ukos, this is the way you answer and respond to a woman who's in distress? Isn't it necessary to punish Yaakov? Is it possible that God has a responsibility to teach and to educate? What's he going to do with Yaakov? Isn't it necessary for God now to instruct him? And then it struck me. The scene that I had imagined taking place up in heaven was all a set-up job. It had all been decided upon so much earlier in history, soon after this event. Pasuk in Parshat Vayechi, number 3. Yaakov Avinu, at the end of his life, he begs of Yosef, don't bury me in Egypt. Take me and bury me in the Moras HaMachpelah. Take me up to the land of Canaan. Al no tigbereini b'mitzrayim, don't bury me in Egypt. So it says, Vani bevoi mi Padan. He says to Yosef, when I came from Padan, Mesa olai Rachel be'eretz Canaan. Rachel died in the land of Canaan. I'll get back in a moment to the word olai. I never understood the word olai till now. What would have been wrong if it would have simply have said, when I came from Padan, Rachel died in the land of Canaan? I'll explain in a moment. She died baderech ba'ot kivrat eretz lavo efrata, on the road when there was just a little bit more distance to come to Efrat ve'ekbereh Hashem, and I buried her there baderech Efrat, on the way to Efrat he beit lachem. Rashi, the great Rashi, v'ani bevori mi Padan, when I came from Padan, v'achal pishani matriach alecho laholichem likove be'eretz Canaan, though I am troubling you that you should bury me in the land of Canaan, v'lo kach ositi li'imcha, I didn't do that to your mother Yosef, because she died near Beit Lechem, and there was kivrat aretz, there was still a way to go. I didn't bring her into Hebron, I didn't even take her into the city of Beit Lechem, I buried her on the road. And then the next Rashi after that, v'ed bereho sham, and I buried her there, v'lo holachti afilu le'Beit Lechem lachnis olaretz, I didn't even bring her into Beit Lechem. V'yadati, and I knew sheyesh b'libcha olai, I knew that your whole life you held it against me. Avodalecha, you should know, shal pi hadibur kvarti hasham, I buried her there by the express command of God. Shetehei le'ezra levoneha, so that she should be the one who will save her children. Kishiyagla otam nebuzaradim, when nebuzaradim is going to send them into exile, v'ho you ovrim derech sham, and they passed kever Rachel, yotzeso Rachel al kivra, Rachel went out over her grave, ubochen, she cries, umevakeshet aleihem rachamim, and she asks for mercy, shenema kol b'roma nishma, the voice is heard in Rama. And you know what God tells Yaakov? I'm going to promise her the shavu banim legvula. The children are going to return. You know what's happening here? You know what this Rashi is telling us? Number one, Yaakov Avinu's punishment for having spoken that way was Meso olai Rachel. Rachel died because of me on that road out there. That was my punishment. And you know what? What's more? The Rebbeinu Shlomo is telling Yaakov Avinu, Rachel is going to beg for her children. And you know what I'm going to tell her? I'm not going to tell her, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? You know what I'm going to tell her? I'm going to tell her, I'm going to make the promise of the Shavu Bonim Yigvulam, the sons are going to return, I'm going to bring your children back. And you know what the Chavashim is now telling Yaakov Avinu? Kach onin et ha'me'ukot. This is the way you answer a woman in distress. It means that the sin that's now going to take place years later on the day of Churban Beit HaMikdash was already decided on. It was foretold. Yaakov Avinu knows it. Yaakov Avinu has been taught how one is to respond to a woman who is in distress. To our rabbis that I spoke to at this convention, I told them that we're a country of mu'ukim and mu'ukot. We are a country of people who are in distress. And even if we have a bit of a respite, we can't even begin to imagine the extent to which the last two years have intensified our anxiety, our stress. We are mu'ukim and mu'ukos. And one has to know how to speak to mu'ukim and mu'ukot. Don't go looking for avedas of Klal Yisrael. You know what the Rebbe Shem wants, especially in the high holiday period? One should not be a kateger of Klal Yisrael, not the prosecutor, but you have to be a sanhedrin. You have to say, Rebbe Shem, despite the fact that we are suffering, we're here. And not only we're here, there are Jews that are continuing to come. And you know what I say, every one of us who is here, every one of us, we are the fulfillment of God's promise to Rachel, v'shavu banim l'gvura. We're here. I've said on a number of occasions, I don't need any fancy or sophisticated proofs of the existence of God or how truthful Torah is. I don't need it. When you have a promise of the Shavu Banim L'Gvulam said thousands of years ago, and we are the living fulfillment of it. Torah is Emes, Moshe Emes, and Todoso Emes. So clear, anybody wants to see it, it's all the hand of God. We are the embodiment of God's promise to Rachel Imenu. It's a very serious responsibility to be able to console the people. You know how you speak to people in distress? God said it to Yeshayahu, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami. That's how you're supposed to speak to people. You're supposed to tell them that they are heroes and they are heroines. It's not simple living here, not simple living here under the circumstances for all intents and purposes of the last 9 years, the last 30 years, the last 2 years. When I said this at the convention of rabbis, one of the rabbis came over and sat down next to me, and I don't often see adult men crying with tears, mama's tears rolling down his eyes. Rabbi Sadid of Levaseret, and he tells me of Goat. He was just at a bar mitzvah. He had been at a bar mitzvah, a young man whose father was killed in a terrorist attack a year ago, and a brother was killed in a terrorist attack half a year ago. And here's this 13-year-old boy who turns to Rabbi Sadid and he tells him, at the funerals, I heard people saying time and time again, God takes the best. He takes the good ones. And this little boy said, maybe it's not worth being good. We never know what's the right thing to say. My wife told me the story of, I think she read it someplace. Somebody came to be Menachem, a woman came to be Menachem Abel, her friend. And she sat there for 15, 20 minutes talking about God. God knows what he's doing, and B'tochen, and Amunah, and all the rest, and all the fine things. And the woman who was in mourning said, I couldn't wait for her to leave. I couldn't wait for her to leave. And then another friend came in and sat with her for 20 minutes and didn't utter a word. And I felt bad when she got up to leave. We have to be tuned in. We have to be sensitive. We have to know that there are ways to answer mu'ukot, ways in which to respond. But every response has to be a limud zchus on Klal Yisrael. And I didn't really study in yeshiva how to be a rabbi, but I had an older brother of Yosef Yael Gold, Tzadik Mitracha, was rabbi for 36 years in Worcester, Massachusetts. I remember one of the first things he told me when I went into the rabbinate, you know, you start usually in September, so you go straight into Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. So he told me one rule: don't talk about the Avedis of Klal Yisrael during the high holiday period. God doesn't want to hear that. Tell Jews how good they are. Let them know that they have great schusim. Let them know that there's a great deal that they have accomplished and they continue to accomplish. Don't be one of those who's going to line up with the litany of sins of the Jewish people. Avoid it like the plague. I believe I've kept that savor of my brother all of these years. Kach onin es hamarukos. There's a way in which one responds, a way in which one speaks. Very fascinating, of course, that the Rabbeinu Shalom, in his great promise to Rachel Imenu, and incidentally, maybe it's important to point out that incredible conversation between Yaakov and Rachel in the longer view of history was turned into a great blessing for the Jewish people. It may be a difficult conversation to read and study at first glance, but look what came from it. What ultimately came from that was the great promise of B'shavu me'eretzo gave, B'shavu banim legvulam. They're going to return to the land of the enemy. They're going to return, the sons are going to return to the borders. God makes two promises. V'shavu me'eretz oyev, they will return from the land of the enemy. V'shavu banim legvulam, sons are going to return to their borders. I believe what's being expressed over here is an idea that we find in a number of other places as well. Jews are going to come back to Eretz Yisrael either as a result of push or a result of pull. There are those who are going to come because they have to come. And there are those who are going to come because they choose to come. There are those who return me'eretz oyev from the land of the enemy. And there are those who return because they are children returning to their boundaries. The same idea is expressed in at least two other places. In number 6 we have the Haftorah. The Haftorah for Parshat Ki Tavo, the Parsha that we just read. All we really need is that last line, the one that's underlined over there, an amazing pasuk. The Navi is describing Jews flowing back to Eretz Yisrael from all four corners of the world. See, Saviv Einayich, Yeshayahu says, take a look, look all around. Udi'i and see, Kulam Nikbitzu, they're all gathered. Boloch, they've come. Banayich Meirachok Yavol, your sons are coming from the distance. Your daughters are coming. Unbelievable wealth. Everything is flowing to Eretz Yisrael. From Mansi, from Denver. Where did Rucker come from? Oh, Connecticut. Connecticut. Where did you come from? New York.
From all over. From all over they come. And then in that last pasuk it says, Mi ele ka'ov to ufena, who are those who fly like the cloud, the chayonina la rubulteyan, and like doves going back to their nests? So Rav Kook, the Chetzadik Levracha, said, there's a difference between a pigeon, a bird, and a cloud. A cloud has no motor of its own. The cloud goes where the wind blows. Blows in this direction, they go in this direction. Blows in that direction, they go in the other direction. The Yonah, the dove, can be hundreds of miles away, and it's going to zero in on precisely where it wants to go to, because it has a homing device built into its nature. It knows exactly where to go to. So Rav Kook said, two kinds of olim are going to come to Eretz Yisrael. There are those who are going to be like the cloud. The wind is blowing in that direction. That's where they're being pushed, and that's where they're going, and that's good too. But then there are those who are like homing pigeons going straight home. They know exactly where they're going to. Their motivation is not something from without. Their motivation is something that is completely from within. I'm fond of quoting Chaim Waxman, the American sociologist who also made Aliyah and wrote a book about American Aliyah about 20 years ago, where he described American Olim as free migrants of an innovative nature. That's a few heavy words just to describe Meshuggah. Free migrants of an innovative nature. That's good. That describes the illness very clearly. There are those who come like the cloud, and there are those who come like the dove. There are those who return, may Eretz Oyev, from the land of the enemy, and then there are children who return home. In this week's Seder, we have it as well, in Parshas Nitzavim, number 7. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et shvutcha v'richamecha. This is a pasuk, and all of these psukim we're going to be saying time and time again during Slichas, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et shvutcha, God is going to return your captivity, v'richamecha, and He will have mercy upon you, v'shav v'kibetzah, and He will return and gather you in, mikol ha'amim, from all the nations, asher hefitzcha Hashem Elokecha shama, where God has dispersed you there. Even if you'll be cast out at the very ends of the earth and the heaven, God is going to bring you home. Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen Mitvinsk, the Meshech Chachma, says on this pasuk the following. Rishav Hashem Elokecha et Shvutcha, the pasuk seems to be repeating itself in a very strange way. God is going to return your captivity. Rishav, He's going to go back, and He's going to gather you in. Didn't the first part of the pasuk talk about the return and the ingathering? So he said there are two kinds of Jews. There is the Jew who feels himself in the Golan, the exile. He feels like he's a captive. He can't wait till he gets out. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et Shvutcha, God is going to return your captives, the ones who yearn and long, the free migrants, the Yonim El Arubuteyem, the Bunim. They're going to go first, and then the Shav. No Jew will be left behind. He's going to go back, and he's going to gather you in from all of the places upon the face of this earth where you are. So here we have this great promise that was given to Rachel. The great promise is an indication of our Kodesh Baruch Hu's sensitivity. We have to know how to speak to people. We have to know how to give encouragement and give strength. We have to give people hope. We have to be honest. We have to be forthright. Doesn't mean that we have to say everything that's on our minds. That was probably a great deal of what is on our minds should not necessarily be said. And then there, we're talking about what one should say and one should not say. I want to share with you on the second side a Meshech Chochma that Meir Simcha Cohen Mitvinsk. It's something that has been on my mind for a long time, and I want to share it with you, and it falls into the category of, we're talking about speech. We're talking about how Yaakov Avinu should have spoken to Rachel. How God points out to him, Tach Onin Et HaMulkot, this is how you speak to a woman who's in distress. You have to know how to speak to a people that is in distress, a people that are suffering anxiety and tension and fear. Nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing to be ashamed of. We look around. We see. We look. We watch. We want to see who's walking in front of us, the side. It's part of our survival. I know I spoke in Kutzvar last week, 2 weeks ago, and I sort of said things that were so natural to me, and people came over and said they just never felt what I had said. What did I tell them? I told them, I don't think I'm the only one, but in Yerushalayim, when you hear one ambulance going by, you're sick, okay. What happens when you hear a second ambulance immediately after the first? Chances are you're going to put on the radio, and when you put on the radio, you're going to be right on. You'll know exactly what's happening. And what about, I described, Nebuch, there's a pigua, there's an attack. What's the first thing? The phones. The phones. Everybody's calling around to every member of the family to check everybody out. Have you been at times where your cell phone simply can't and doesn't operate because there are so many cell phones being used at one time, people trying to check members of the family? There are so many things that have become part of our survival mechanism that people living in Kutzarts don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. And we've learned to live with it. We've learned to live with it. There's something good about that and something not so good. We survive because we've learned to live with it. And I think the day has to come where we have to stand up and let our voices be heard. No people should have to live the way we have lived during the course of the past 2 years. Meshech Chochma. On the right-hand side of the sheet, on the other side. This is something that to me is, it is a morality and an ethics that has been trampled underfoot in this country. And sometimes I'm afraid that people simply have forgotten what's moral and what's immoral. I want to point out a certain immorality. It's a pasuk in Parashat Ki Teitzeh. It says when you go out to battle, v'nishmarta mikol davar ra, you should watch yourself from anything evil. Says the Meshech Chochma, Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen Mitvinsk. I'm just going to read some sections, just follow me. It's worthwhile. It's a classic document. Lo rechok lomar, it's not too far out to say, shekavanat ha-pasuk, the intention of this pasuk is, Shelo legalot mistorin shel hamilchama. You have to be careful in wartime what you say. When you go out to war, v'nishmarta mikol davar ra, he reads it as though it said mikol dibur ra. In times of war, watch your words. I'm not ashamed to say that I was a very little and precocious young lad during the course of the Second World War, and there were big billboards that said, loose lips sink ships. Wartime, you have to be careful what you say.
You shouldn't tell any person what's going on in the battlefield or any information. Therefore, it's correct. And that's why a person should not be permitted to leave the camp, because he leaves the camp, he may fall into enemy hands, and who knows what kind of information they're going to get from him. Shema yasiguhu son ehem, lest the enemy capture him, v'imotu mipiv tachamotam, and from his mouth they're going to get information about the camp of the Jewish people. He brings an example. There was an Egyptian who had been captured by David, and he gave over information about his people. V'zeh b'chlau dovara. Dovara, you have to be careful of dovara. V'kivnu l'mash kasafni. He says, that's the intention of the pasuk. You have to be careful what you say in wartime. You have to be careful not to hurt the Jewish people at a time of war. Afilu dibur ra, even a word that's bad, and that's lashon hara. That's why it says, person should not be permitted to leave the camp. Then if you'll see where it's underlined, he says the following. He establishes the following principle, the following halacha. According to the Talmud Yerushalmi, there are two negative commandments. Al shnei sugei lashon hara, there are two kinds of lashon hara. Everybody knows about one kind, you know, you say something bad about a fellow Jew to a fellow Jew. Meshech Chochma says that there is an even worse and more terrible lashon hara when one speaks about a Jew to a goy. When you say, for example, that you're going to send information about officers in the Israeli army to the International Court in The Hague, and this is seen by some of our people as taking a position for morality, this is betrayal of the worst order. Or if in Beth El somebody's closing in his porch, and there will be human rights groups in this country that will notify the whole world that construction is going on in Yehuda Bishomron, this is betrayal of the Jewish people. This is the worst kind of lashon hara. Rabbi Simcha is going to go on to say that this lashon hara is worse than idolatry and is worse than chilul Hashem. He lists this as the worst possible sin. Then we have it taking place every day, and there is no condemnation. And these fellows walk around as though they are the super sensitive people to the plight of others, and this is the way in which they express their great intellectual morality, when it is nothing more than the worst lashon hara possible. There are two kinds of lashon hara. Echad alashon hara betoch bnei Yisrael atzmon. He said that one is the lashon hara that one says amongst the children of Israel, one against the other. That's lotei leich Rachel da'amecha. The pasuk says it. You see how a goyim reads a pasuk? You shall not go as a talebearer da'amecha amongst your people. Obviously, there is another kind of talebearer. The one who doesn't bear the tales da'amecha amongst your people. Ba'am b'nei Yisrael, v'hasheni loshen hora michutz l'manach machnei Yisrael. That's what the pasuk says, ki teitzei machane, when you're going to go out of the camp. It's not going to be in the midst of the Jewish people. And then you're going to speak against Klal Yisrael. It's much worse than betrayal. It's immoral. It's unconscionable. I'd rather not use the words that I would want to use. But you know exactly what I mean. And yet at a time of war, when Klal Yisrael are me'ukim and me'ukos, when we are in distress, we need even leaders of our people from within, right here. And those from Chutzlaretz, who make statements of all sorts. Doesn't occur to them that they are placing awesome and frightening pressure on the Jewish people? This is what we need. We need somebody to tell us that our soldiers' morality and ethics is being eroded by the conquest. I was interviewed today by a radio station, Esham Bolam, and I said there is no greater morality than a soldier who is going to defend his family, his people, his country, and his land. There is no way that that's going to erode the morality of our soldiers. It's a lie that the left has tried to convince us of. That's saying Lashon Hara about Klal Yisrael to the nations of the world. He's going to go on to say that for this sin, there's only one source of atonement, and that atonement was the incense, the ketoret, that was brought by the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim in the very inner chambers of the Holy of Holies. Only when one is into exile in Egypt, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes out that second day and two Jews are fighting with one another, and one says, "Do you plan on killing me like you killed the Egyptian?" So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Ochein noda hadova." Oh, now I know. And Rashi says, "What does he know? If a Jew has betrayed him to Paro, then he knows why Jews are in exile." Dasan is the one who told Paro that Moshe had killed the Mitzri. Do you understand what kind of lowly betrayal that was? And then, of course, he brings the Gemara that we all know. Because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Goes to Rome to speak against the Jewish people. Kach onin es hamarukos. This is the way one speaks about to a people who are in distress. So here it is, the Rebbeinu Shalom begins in his unique and inimitable way. Yaakov has said something that he shouldn't have said. We can be malitzchus on Yaakov. He may be speaking out of a sense of terrible frustration, but he had no right to say what he did to Rachel. Can't say that to her. Hatachat elokim anochi, I'm in the place of God, Hashem amon ani meitri poten, who has withheld from you through to the womb. He has no right. He can't do that. The Rebbeinu Shem is not going to wait 2,000 years in order to teach Yaakov what has to be said. Here he must teach him immediately. Therefore Rachel dies as soon as they come into Eretz Yisrael. And he tells him, you're going to bury her here. Because there's going to be another time in history when she is going to cry out, give me my children, and if not, I'm dead. And you know how I'm going to respond? I'm going to respond by saying, B'shavu b'olam v'kvulam. Children are going to return. I promise you they're going to come back. What troubles me at times, and we know it in families, one Yiddish mama can take care of a whole family. And a whole people are having difficulty taking care of one Yiddish mama. Even the thought of having abandoned Kevar Rachel started a few years ago. Even now they're not sure what to do with it. Ain mama, you know, Nebuch, a mama that comes old. This child is busy, and that one is heen, and this one is there, and that one has this schedule. And let's put, you know, if we could put Rachel in a home for the elderly, it would save everybody trouble, you know, all over. One Yiddish mama can take care of a ganz Klal Yisrael. And a ganz Klal Yisrael is having such difficulty taking care of that one Yiddish mama. Though some people tell me that this month there have been a lot of people, thank God, going to Kevar Rachel. Yeah. You want to know how to answer the Me'ukos? I'll tell you how to answer the Me'ukos. I have found so much meaning in a number of Psukim in Yeshayahu, and I want to read
those psukim in Yeshayahu, and with that we will close the shiur. Number 9. Ki hinini borei shamayim chadoshim ve'eretz chadosha. Yeshayahu says in the name of God, behold, I'm going to create a new heaven and a new earth. V'lo tizacharno harishonot v'tolot ta'aleno aleiv. You won't remember all the tzadas of the very beginning. It won't even come up upon your mind. Ki im sisu v'gilu adayad, you'll be full of joy and happiness forever. Asher ani borei, with this creation that I will create. Ki hinini borei et Yerushalayim gila. I'm going to create a Yerushalayim that's going to be a source of joy. V'amom masos, and her people will be full of happiness. V'galti v'Yerushalayim, I will be full of joy in Yerushalayim. By the way, I read that ki hinini borei et Yerushalayim gila. I have a feeling it means something like gila, that there will be joy there and in the rest of Yerushalayim. V'galti b'Yerushalayim, v'sasti b'ami v'lo yishama ba. Listen to these words. V'lo yishama ba od kol v'chi v'kol zaka. You're not going to hear again the sound of crying or the sound of an alarm. You won't hear the second ambulance. You won't hear the first ambulance in Yerushalayim. Lo yiyem yisham od ul yomim v'zakein asher lo yimali v'syamov. There will not be young or even elderly people who will not complete their years. Ki hanar ben meo shona yomos. One dies at 100, it's going to be young. V'achote ben meo shona yukola. Uban ubatim, they will build houses. V'yoshu, they will live. V'natu kramim, and they will plant vineyards. V'achlu piryam, and they will eat the fruit. Lo yivnu va'achar yishev. They're not going to build so that somebody else can live there. Lo yit'u va'achar yochal. They're not going to plant so that somebody else can eat. Ki kimei ha'eitz yimei ami u'ma'ase yedem yivalu b'chit. Lo yigu ladik. None of our efforts are going to be in vain. Everything is going to have its purpose, and this city will be a city of great joy. In order for the city to reach that point, we have to remain strong. And we have to learn, and we have to teach ourselves how to respond, how to speak, how to formulate our words. We can't simply say everything that's on our mind. It may not be the right thing. It may not be the right time. We have to develop a super sensitivity to the feelings of others. There are frayed nerves in this country. We have to know Eich Onin et Hamu'ukot. How do you speak to them? Incidentally, if we learn how to speak to our fellow Jews, we will know how to speak to a Rabbeinu Shalom. And if we know how to speak to a fellow Jew, we will also learn that the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to respond to us, just as he responds to Rachel with the great promise of the Shavu Panim L'Kulam, so he will respond to our prayers, and we have a great deal to pray for. Our prayers obviously should be Tichle Shona V'Kilaloteha, let the year and all its curses end. Tochel Shona U'Birchoteha, let the new year begin with all of its blessings. Tiva V'Chatima Tova.